Truth News Network. We don't tell you what to think, but we give you truth to think about. This is TNN, the Truth News Network. Here's Dan Newman.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program, 2020 Democrat Presidential Candidates. Yeah, we took a break for a few weeks. We're going to bring you the inside scoop on everybody we see as a potential challenger in the 2020 Democrat primaries. We've looked at several so far, and I'll refer you back to previous chapters at Truth News Network if you want to see the ones that we've talked about. But we're going to move forward today, fast forward, to Senator Elizabeth Warren. It's official. Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren has thrown her hat into the ring for the 2020 Democrat Party nomination for president. It comes as no surprise to just about everybody that the far-left Warren is in the hunt for the nomination, and that she has already shown in just a few days she has actually moved farther to the left politically. Why would she do that? To keep up with the crowd. Think about it. Kamala Harris, senator from California, has already declared, and she has immediately embraced some of the furthest leftist agenda items that have even appeared in the political arena so far. Same holds true for New York Senator Gillibrand. So, let's talk about Elizabeth Warren today. She was born and raised in a middle-class family in Oklahoma. You'll remember that in her 2016 campaign for president, she made herself a lightning rod for Republicans, especially then-candidate Donald Trump. The Warren scandal of sorts came from her application to teach at Harvard University, in which she claimed to be of Native American descent. Now, even though she grew up in Oklahoma, as we said, she claimed that her mother had Cherokee blood. Many felt like she used what little Native American she had for her personal benefit to claim minority status favoritism in her Harvard job application. And Trump, during that campaign, gave her the title of Pocahontas, a very obvious jab at her minority status claim. Even with all of her exposure while campaigning, many do not know much about her. So let's take a look. She's a graduate of the University of Houston and Rutgers Law School. Her career as an academic focused on bankruptcy law, where she focused primarily on empiric decision-making of the public following legal changes. Warren taught at several law schools, including the University of Houston, the University of Texas at Austin, the University of Pennsylvania, and of course then at Harvard University. Warren's initial foray into public policy began with opposing what eventually became a 2005 act restricting bankruptcy access for individuals. Warren saw her profile rise in the late 2000s for her forceful stances in favor of more stringent regulations following the 2007-2008 financial crisis. She served as chair of the Congressional Oversight Panel of the Troubled Asset Relief Program and was instrumental in the creation of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, better known as the CFPB, for which she served as the first special advisor. Unable to overcome Republican opposition to become the director of that agency, Warren instead challenged and defeated Republican incumbent Senator Scott Brown of Massachusetts in 2012. She was the keynote speaker of the 2016 Democrat National Convention and became vice chair of the Senate Democratic Caucus the following year. She is a noted liberal leader. She is focused on consumer protection, economic opportunity, and the social safety net while she served in the Senate. Following her re-election to the Senate in 2018, she announced the formation of an exploratory committee for her campaign in the upcoming 2020 election, and now she is officially a candidate. You may be interested to discover that Warren was registered as a Republican from 1991 to 1996. She voted as a Republican for many years And when asked why, she said this: I was a Republican because I thought that those were the people who best supported markets. According to Warren, she began to vote Democratic in 1995 because she no longer believed that to be true. But she states that she has voted for both parties because she believed that neither party should dominate. According to her, the Republican Party was no longer principled in its conservative approach to economics and to markets, and was instead tilting the playing field in favor of a big financial institution and against middle-class American families. On September 14th of 2011, Warren declared her intention to run for the Democratic nomination for the 2012 election in Massachusetts for the U.S. Senate. The seat had been won by Republican Scott Brown in that 2010 special election after the death of Ted Kennedy. A week later, a video of Warren speaking in Andover became a viral video on the internet. In it, she replies to the charge that asking the rich to pay more taxes is class warfare, pointing out that no one grew rich in the United States without depending on infrastructure paid for by the rest of society. She stated this: there is nobody in this country who got rich on his own. Nobody. You moved your goods to market on the roads the rest of us paid for. You hired workers the rest of us paid to educate. You were safe in your factory because of police forces and fire forces that the rest of us paid for. You didn't have to worry that marauding bands would come and seize everything at your factory and hire someone to protect against this because of the work the rest of us did. Now look, you built a factory and it turned into something terrific or a great idea. God bless. Keep a big hunk of it. But part of the underlying social contract is you take a hunk of that and pay forward for the next kid who comes along. President Obama later echoed those sentiments in a 2012 election campaign speech, and I'm one of those that did not know that Elizabeth Warren created that idea. So let's look at her political actions in bullet point form. In December of 2016, Warren announced plans to introduce a bill to address President-elect Donald Trump's perceived conflicts of interest related to his business empire. Under her proposal, Donald Trump could face impeachment if he fails to declare conflicts of interest between his presidential role and his business interest. She stated, the only way for President-elect Trump to truly eliminate conflicts of interest is to divest his financial interest and place them in a blind trust. Her proposal never made it into law. In November of 2018, Warren said she will not vote for Trump's United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, known as the USMCA, saying it won't stop outsourcing, it won't raise wages, and it won't create jobs. It's NAFTA 2.0. It's noteworthy that that measure has not been formally approved yet by the United States Senate, which must happen. In 2018 also, Warren had called for the abolition of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's ICE. She's one of many far-left Democrats in Congress and in the Senate that have called for ICE to be abolished. Just recently, January 2019, she criticized President Trump's announcement of his decision to withdraw troops from Syria and from Afghanistan. She announced in the last few days, formally, the details of her proposed wealth tax to be levied on the wealthiest of Americans. Rather than bullet point details of that proposal, let's look and listen to an expert's analysis of Senator Warren's proposal as was given on Fox and Friends.
Meanwhile, it's a growing drumbeat by the political left heading into the 2020 races. Raise the taxes on the rich.
Senator Elizabeth Warren proposing what she's calling the ultra-millionaire tax that would raise over $2.7 trillion over 10 years. And she is not alone.
So what impact would this have on Trump's booming economy? John Karch is with the Americans for Tax Reform. He joins us right now live from our nation's capital. John, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This would be so simple. Just tax the super wealthy and then we're set.
You know, the Democrats do this every time they run for president. So you had Bill Clinton claimed that he was only going to tax rich people,
right.
Eventually raise taxes on everybody. Same goes for Barack Obama. They want you to look over here and say, oh, my gosh, look at the shiny tax on the rich, to distract you from the fact that they're eventually going to tax the middle income households.
Which is the last thing they can say.
That's right. And this tax, this wealth tax, this would be a radical departure in this country from how we do things. There's a reason the Constitution prohibits these direct taxes on people, because it is wrong on principle. It's also extremely hard to enforce and to comply with this tax. Senator Warren has said that there would be a significant increase in the IRS enforcement budget. In English, that means IRS agents.
Sure.
And these agents would have to come in and make a list of all assets that people had and then assess a tax on that each and every year. And it's not like this money's just sitting in a pile that they can just grab 2% of it.
Sure.
It's tied up in businesses that employ people and make things.
You know, this is, it seems so foreign to a lot of Americans who believe in capitalism. But when you see all of these politicians that are popular with their socialist ideas like this, is there a chance that something like this could pass, or is it just something they're trying to say to get elected?
Personally, I'm glad the Democrats keep talking like this, because it reminds people that what they would do if they were in power. If they had the ability, they would impose these taxes. And we're only a month into the new year, and we've already seen Democrats propose a carbon tax, a corporate tax increase, an income tax increase, and now this wealth tax, which, by the way, I don't know if Senator Warren is aware of this, but countries like Denmark and Sweden used to have wealth taxes, but they're so unworkable, and they actually raise such little money, that those two countries abolished those taxes. So there's no reason America should be going down that road.
Yeah, because wouldn't the wealthy people or the wealthy companies leave?
That's such a great point, because they would, because capital is mobile. In a modern times, capital can go anywhere in the world. And so you want countries to compete for a low tax rate and, you know, a strong environment where you can create jobs. By the way, Elizabeth Warren's plan has a 40% exit tax. So while I don't condone renouncing your citizenship, that is considered a human freedom to leave the country that you,
sure,
you live in. But in her case, there's a 40% exit tax. So on the way out the door, she wants 40% of everything
of course
you have.
You can't
and that's
make it
just,
up.
Hey, it's better
that's
than 90.
Just wrong. So by the way, imagine all the celebrities that want to move to Canada because of they don't like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Warren will meet them at the border and grab 40% of everything they have. So I look forward to seeing that.
I got a feeling we're going to be hearing more of it as well. John Karch, thank you very much
thank
for joining
John.
Us live from D.C.
Hey, I appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right.
Steve Doocy and Ainsley Earhart, somewhat conservative, obviously there, didn't seem to get a lot of approval from the morning show host regarding the framework of the Warren plan. It would tax the net worth of people with assets over $50 million at 2% a year. Now that's every year, plus another 3% on fortunes over $1 billion. It would apply to all assets, even the wealth hidden outside the U.S., to avoid income tax. There would be some wrinkles to work out, like how the IRS would get an accurate measure of those assets every year. The mega wealthy seldom hold their riches in cash. Think about this. Most are tied up in corporate stocks and bonds, real estate investments, and other holdings. That would make it very difficult to get accurate measures every year of the real values of those holdings. And in many cases, this would force annual liquidation of enough of these hard assets for the wealthy to pay those taxes. And think about it. If they own companies, how would you get that turned into cash without selling all or parts of those companies? Just one example is Jeff Bezos. He's considered the world's richest person today. He would have to pay $4.1 billion in the first year under Senator Elizabeth Warren's proposed wealth tax based on his current net worth of $137.1 billion. Most all of his wealth is tied up in, yes, Amazon stock. And a portion of that stock would probably have to be sold to pay that $4.1 billion in year one of this tax plan. Other billionaires like Warren Buffett would face the same dilemma. Most wealthy Americans keep most of their wealth in corporate investments, just like Bezos and Buffett. When interviewed recently on MSNBC, Warren scoffed when asked how difficult it would be to annually ascertain accurate values of all these assets of these richest Americans on which to base these taxes. The senator forgets that most of those in Congress, including herself, are worth millions, meaning that millionaires make most of the federal laws that control these things. It is doubtful that this law, if it was ever passed, would look and sound anything like it looks and sounds today. To some, Warren's tax idea may seem like a good one, but making good ideas actually be good is often harder implementing than creating in the first place. It's estimated by several experts that this tax would raise $2.75 trillion over the first 10 years. $2.75 trillion. And you put that in perspective of Elizabeth Warren's other pet projects like free health care for everybody, called Medicare for All, and also free college for everybody. $2.75 trillion over a 10-year period is a drop in the bucket in dollars and cents that would be required to fund Medicare for All and free college. So let's move on. Is Elizabeth Warren electable? This is sketchy to establish. Many feel her failure to make it through the Democrat primaries in 2016 had more to do with Hillary Clinton's name and lengthy 30-year tenure in national politics because of Bill, her husband. Democrats definitely wanted a woman in the White House in 2016, but just did not want Elizabeth Warren. Her reputation as a smart and wise political manager is a bit sketchy too. Though she has spent much time in various political roles, most were in appointed positions, she seems really pushy to a lot of voters. Her likability in the very early stages of the 2020 White House run lags behind those of the two other already announced female candidates, Senators Kamala Harris of California and Senator Kirsten Gillibrand of New York. Remember this, though. It is a very long way from here to November of 2020. The greatest problem for Warren in this campaign, other than her ability or inability to garner the necessary political support considering her Democrat primary opponents, is the requirement for massive fundraising. By most accounts, it will take $1 billion plus to fund the necessary campaign to beat the incumbent president in this race. Warren would probably find that a bit tough, especially with her very obvious and very public recent lurch further left in her political positions. Big campaign spenders are on the most part sitting on their hands right now. They're waiting to find out who among the plentiful stable of Democrat candidates can weather the early going in this very young and very long campaign cycle. Getting large financial support quickly will be mandatory for anybody to develop campaign staying power. Warren is unlikely to be able to get that done. In summary, some candidates from both sides of the aisle just have the knack of rubbing a lot of voters the wrong way. It may be because of their voices, their speaking voices, their messaging, their appearance in public, even in the way they speak to political opponents and even their supporters in public. Senator Warren has the ability to slip into that category, unfortunately for her. In facing the likes of Harris and Gillibrand in the early going, Warren may dig herself in a hole which she finds is too deep to survive comparisons with those two in many political ways. She's not as polished as either, even though she is a more experienced politician than either. Most often, we see the ability or inability to raise a lot of money decides presidential races. And it may seem sexist to say this, but when multiple female candidates appear together on stage for debates, their mannerisms, the way they answer questions, impact voters' opinions more than their party politics, and policies. And sometimes appearance is everything. I think that impacted Warren's staying power when she ran against Hillary in 2016. I think she'll struggle to beat that stigma in 2020. And I don't think she'll successfully make that trip up 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That's going to do it today at Truth News Network. Thank you so much for joining us here. We're looking at the 2020 probable Democrat candidates for the primaries. We'll keep you posted, and as they formally declare, we'll bring more and more of them to you. And at the end of the whole process, we're going to tell you who we think will be the person that goes to the general election against incumbent President Donald Trump. And just so you know, we already have picked who that will be. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again soon. Till then, have a great day. So long, everybody.
Real Truth, Real News, TNN, the Truth News Network.